Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see everyone out this morning. Appreciate Bob and Larry reaching out to me to see what the lesson would be on and how they might try to make the service tie together. I'd like to start by telling you about a man who you probably know his name. And you may know a little bit about him, but I didn't know a lot about him. But I want to tell you about a man by the name of John D. Rockefeller. I suspect you've heard of him before. Mr. Rockefeller was the first person in the modern era to reach the status of billionaire. Billion with a B. And just to put it into perspective, at least as far as we know, based on modern calculations, there is no one who has ever been more wealthy than John Rockefeller. In fact, it's not even close. If you were to take his wealth and translate it into 2016 dollars, he would, at his peak, he was worth something on the order of $606 billion. Okay, I have a hard time really grasping what $1 billion is, but he was worth $606 billion. The current most wealthiest man in the world is Bill Gates, and he isn't even in the category in the same conversation with John Rockefeller. Bill Gates is worth something on the order of $82 billion, so you do the math on that, and Rockefeller was seven times more wealthy than Bill Gates. The man had more money than he could ever spend. He was an extremely driven man. He set goals and worked tirelessly to reach them. Every decision, every attitude, every relationship that he had was tailored to create his own personal power and wealth. In 1870, Rockefeller, along with a few other men, founded a company called Standard Oil. As kerosene and gasoline grew in importance, Rockefeller's wealth soared, and he eventually became the richest person in the country. At one point, Standard Oil controlled 90% of the oil in the United States. It was eventually determined by Congress that it was a monopoly, and it had to break up, I believe, into 20 separate countries, which, you know, you think, well, here I own this company that has a monopoly, and now it has to be broken up into 20 companies. Well, that actually made Rockefeller even more wealthy. At the age of 23, he became a millionaire, and at the age of 50, he became the first billionaire. But 3 years later, at the age of 53, John Rockefeller became very ill. Now, the exact nature of his illness, I just couldn't find. I didn't know what it was, and probably they didn't know what it was. They knew what his symptoms were. He suffered from depression. I think that's very interesting. Here's this man who's very wealthy, but yet he suffers from moderate depression. He had some somewhat extreme body pain and some severe digestive troubles. In addition, he developed alopecia. He lost all of the hair on his body, and he began to wear a wig as a result of it. In complete agony, the world's only billionaire could buy anything he wanted. And yet, at this point in his life, he could only eat milk and crackers. An associate wrote, he could not sleep, he would not smile, and nothing in life meant anything to him. His personal, highly skilled physicians predicted that he would die within the year. All the money the world could buy, and yet he apparently was in misery. John Rockefeller was a very wealthy man. Each one of us is also very wealthy. Not to the magnitude of Rockefeller, but we're compared to the rest of the world. Each of us is wealthy. The average annual income in the world is something on the order of $10,000 a year. So if you make more than $10,000 a year, you are above average as it comes to the world. You want to be in the top 1%? We hear a lot about that. Oh, you know, 1%ers. Well, the United States is full of people in the top 1% as it concerns wealth. In fact, if you earn more than $34,000 a year, in the global scheme of things, you are in the top 1%. I suspect that many of us fall into that category. Oh, well, stop comparing us to the world. Well, what about the U.S.? Okay, well, let's look at the U.S. Many of us are also wealthy when it comes to U.S. standards. The average annual income in the United States is $52,000 a year. If you make more than that, then you are, by the U.S. standards, above average. But none of that matters, because God has blessed us with things much greater than wealth. But this morning we are going to talk about wealth, which is also a blessing from God. The Bible has a lot to speak about wealth. We could look at lots of things in the Bible to look at wealth. I had Larry read 1 Timothy chapter 6, because if you've been with us for the last quarter on Sunday mornings, that's what I've been studying. We've been studying together 1 Timothy, and we made it all the way through chapter 5, and we didn't get a chance to talk about chapter 6. Well, chapter 6 talks about wealth. Apparently, the congregation there at Ephesus, where Timothy was, had some members that were fairly wealthy. And Paul gives to Timothy some instructions that he was expected to pass on to others in the congregation about how to handle your wealth. And Larry read that for us. We're going to talk about 1 Timothy 6. We could look at Solomon. We could study some of the Proverbs. We could look at Ecclesiastes and look at Solomon, who I think, although there's really no way to prove this, I think Solomon probably was more wealthy than Rockefeller, just because of the descriptions of the things that Solomon had. But we could look at that. That's a place we could go. But really what I want to do is use the teachings of Jesus, and one specific teaching of Jesus, to frame our discussion on wealth. Jesus tells a story in Luke chapter 12. And if you'd like to turn with me, I'm going to read kind of the things that led up to the story and then the story itself. The Bible calls it a parable, but it's not in the same kind of parable that we see others. You know, parables are earthly stories with heavenly meanings. Well, I think this is an earthly story with, in lots of ways, an earthly meaning. But in Luke chapter 12, we're going to read, beginning in verse 13, I'll read this, and then we're going to look at this particular passage as a frame for studying wealth. Luke chapter 12, beginning in verse 13. Then one from the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Then he said to them, "Man, who made me a judge or an arbitrator over you?" And he said to them, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist of the abundance of the things he possesses." Then he spoke a parable to them, saying, "The ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, 'What shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops?' So he said, 'I'll do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there I will store all my crops and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, be merry.' But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided?' So is he who lays up treasures for himself and is not rich towards God." If you come away with nothing from this lesson, that last verse is really the point of this lesson. And that is, don't lay up treasures here. Be rich towards God. You're going to hear that over and over again. Don't lay up treasures here. Lay up treasures elsewhere. Be rich towards God. It's a very interesting passage. We sometimes forget the first part of what happened. See, there was a man that came up to Jesus and wanted Jesus to settle a dispute over an inheritance. I haven't been involved in too many inheritance disputes, but I understand that they're somewhat common, aren't they? It's sad how sometimes inheritance can create turmoil. And this, in this situation, we don't really know anything about the situation except what's presented there, that a man says, make my brother divide the inheritance with me. And Jesus first declined, stating, that's not why he's here. That's not who made me the arbitrator? That's not why Jesus is here. But he goes on a little bit. See, Jesus points out the root of the problem between the brothers, and that's greed. We don't even need to know the rest of the story to know that that's the problem that's happening here. Whether it's that one is holding more than was proper, or that the other was demanding more than was proper, either way, greed was the root of this problem. Greed, covetousness, the love of money, all of these things, are, no matter how you say it, they're all in the same family. And they all create lots and lots of trouble back then, today, and in the future. Larry read for us 1 Timothy chapter 6, and it's from there that we learn in verse 6 through 9, we talk about the love of money. Now, godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and clothing with these, we shall be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from their faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. The church at Ephesus had a money problem. And the money problem wasn't because they were wealthy. It was because there were some who desired to be wealthy, and in that desire, they fell into many foolish and harmful lusts, some of whom had strayed away from the faith. The love of money is the source of all kinds of evil. Not money itself. Money is a tool, a gift from God, but the love of money is the root of many sins. And Jesus illustrates this point in this parable that he used concerning this rich man. Let's talk about the man for a minute. The man wasn't a thief. He didn't get his money through extortion. He wasn't a swindler. By all accounts, the man is being presented as an honest farmer who gained his wealth through hard work and through help from the Lord, because that particular year was a very bountiful harvest. That is a blessing from God. But that blessing from God was there for him because he worked hard for it. He had a bumper crop, and now he had to decide what to do with that blessing, how to handle it. You see, having wealth isn't in and of itself sinful. There's many people in the Bible who are mentioned as being wealthy. Job, Abraham, Solomon, we could list lots of them. The issue here is not the wealth. The issue is, what do we do with our wealth? It's the decisions that we make with money that appear to be the issue. So let's look at this rich man's decisions. There are four, as we look at this, there's at least four that we're going to talk about this morning. Four mistakes that the rich man made. And we'll look at each one of them. So let's start with the first mistake. The first mistake is how he measured success. He measured success in the wrong way. Because money is not the measure of success that we should be using. Jesus told the story to point out that life does not consist of how much we have. That's the point Jesus says. It's not about the abundance of what you have. That's not what makes you successful or unsuccessful. In Luke 22, this is what Jesus says, or Luke 12:22. This is what he says just immediately following this parable. This is what he says to his disciples. Then he said to his disciples, therefore I say to you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about the body, what you will put on. Life is more than food, and the body is more than clothing. So after Jesus talks to this man about his inheritance and says there's this rich man and gives this story, Jesus immediately follows it up by talking about the very basics of life, food and clothing. And what does he say? Don't worry about those things. Don't worry about them, because life is more than those things. Success is more than just money. It's not really even about money. Because what do we know about money? Well, wealth is a rich man's false security. in Proverbs 18. Remember, coming from Solomon, who very well may have been the wealthiest man ever, this is what Solomon, one of the many things Solomon had to say about wealth. In Proverbs 18, verses 10 and 11, "The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run to it and are safe. A rich man's wealth is his strong city, and like a high wall in his own esteem." This gives us the comparison that really we're going to talk about most of the morning. We can trust in riches, in wealth. That's what the rich man's wealth is. It's his strong city. But the name of the Lord is a strong tower. See, our measure of success shouldn't be in dollars and cents. Our measure of success should be in the name of the Lord. And why is that? Because riches are unstable. Proverbs 23, going just a little bit further in some of Solomon's teachings, verse 4 and 5, "Do not overwork to be rich because of your own understanding. Cease. Will you set your eyes on what is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away like an eagle towards heaven." Money just flies away. Now, for some people, it's of their own choosing. We all know people who just spend and spend and spend, and money just seems to take wings and go. But that's not the point that Solomon is making here. Solomon is saying, don't trust in riches, because what is wealth anyway? If you had a dollar today, are you very rich? No. But if you had a dollar 100 years ago, well, that might be something. I mean, when things cost a nickel or 3 cents, I mean, what's the point there? Well, money is just relative. Money, wealth, is all relative. Consider looking at your 401k. I mean, have you ever had that experience where your money just took wings and flew away? Money is not something to be trusted in. It's an unstable commodity. And therefore, it's not the measure of success that we should be using. How can we use money, wealth, as a measure of success when it comes and goes as it does? In the end, success is determined by God. It's God who determines what is a successful life. And the true measure of success is found only in God's eyes. In Proverbs 21 and 2, every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but God weighs the heart. What is successful? Successful is what God deems it to be. And in the end, when we all stand before God and are judged, He will tell us whether we were successful in life or not. Because this life isn't about collecting things. This is what Jesus told the man who had the dispute with his brother about his inheritance. It's not about stuff. In the end, it's about whether or not you get a reward in heaven. The second mistake that the rich man made was that he missed an opportunity to do good with the surplus. Have you ever had this situation where you had more than you needed? And what did you do with that more that you needed? I had an opportunity I didn't intend to tell this, but I think I will. This past week, I think most of you know, I traveled to Boston, and I went out to eat. The hospital paid for me to have a meal, so I went and ate, and I had a very nice salad, and then I had some pasta, and it was nice. It was more than I needed. I actually only ended up eating about a third of the pasta. I'm not on vacation, but I'm out of town. What am I going to do with that extra? Well, as I was walking to the restaurant, I saw a man on the side of the road, a younger man, begging. And I don't know at that moment, I don't know why I thought to do this. I asked them to box it up. I mean, I had a refrigerator in my hotel, but I had every other meal prepared for me from that point on. So it wasn't like I needed the food, but there was another man who apparently did. And so boxed it up. I went and talked with him and asked him if he wanted it. And he said, sure. So I gave my excess. Maybe you've done the same thing. Maybe you've had excess of something else. Maybe you've had an opportunity to do good. This man had that opportunity. He had an abundance. And rather than think of others, he thought only of himself. See, he missed an opportunity. One of the joys of working, of gaining wealth, of earning money, is the opportunity to help others. In Ephesians 4 and 28, this is what we're told. Let him, Paul here is telling the people at Ephesus to move away from their old life and start doing different things. And he says, let him who stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands what is good, that he may have something to give him who has need. What was the point that Paul was making? Go get a job so that you can do good, so that you can work, so that you can earn a living. And what was the other point? So that you can give to those who have need. The rich man had plenty. He had so much that he couldn't even fill his barns. But rather than think, well, I'll fill my barns, then anything that I can't put in my barns, I'll give to other people because God has really blessed me. No, he thinks only of himself. That's not how we should be. We should give of our excess. In Luke chapter 3, verse 11, Jesus is speaking to the Pharisees about doing good. That's sort of the general topic. In verse 11, this is what he said. He answered and said to them, he who has two tunics, let him give to him who has none. And he who has food, let him do likewise. If you have more than you need, the expectation of God is that you share, that you give to those who are in need. Yet this man's focus, this man in Luke chapter 12, his focus was only on himself. He was thinking of his own retirement. If we were ever going to say there was a passage in the Bible that talked about retirement, it would be this passage. Because this man is doing what we do, right? You work, you build up, and then you stop working. You retire. And that's what this man was doing. But God has a retirement plan as well. God has the ultimate retirement plan. A little bit later in Luke chapter 12, Jesus speaks of this in verse 29. Do not seek what you should eat or what you should drink, nor have an anxious mind. For these things the nations of the world seek after, and your Father knows that you need these things. But the kingdom of God and all these things shall be added. But seek the kingdom of God, and all these things shall be added to you. Do not fear, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell what you have and give alms. Provide yourself money bags which do not grow old, a treasure in heaven that does not fail, where no thief approaches nor moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. We often read this out of Matthew, but this is the passage after. This is the same passage in Luke, but we get the context here, like Dwayne was talking about this morning. The context is this story that Jesus tells, and then subsequently goes in to say, "This world isn't about what you can collect here. Don't worry about those things. Instead, prepare for the ultimate retirement. Prepare for heaven." And what is the purpose of wealth anyway? Well, in 1 Timothy 6, Paul gives Timothy some instructions to give those who are wealthy. And this is what Timothy is to tell them. Command in 1 Timothy 6, verse 17 through 19. Command those who are rich in this present age not to be haughty, nor to trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God, who gives us richly all things to enjoy. Let them do good, that they may be rich in good works, ready to give, willing to share, storing up for themselves a foundation for a time to come, that they may lay hold on eternal life. What's the command here? Is the command the same command that we see the person who we call the rich young ruler? He's a rich ruler. He comes to Jesus and says, I did all of these wonderful things. What do I need to do now? And Jesus says, sell everything and give it to the poor and follow me. Is that the command? No. That's what Jesus told that man because he had a greed problem. His money was more important to him than his service to God. Now, if you find yourself in that same situation, maybe that is the very thing that you need to do. Maybe you need to divest yourself of the thing that is causing you to not serve God completely. But well, remember, wealth is not the issue. Paul tells Timothy to tell others not to sell everything that they have, but to be ready to do good. Don't just be wealthy in money, but be wealthy in good works. Willing to give, or ready to give, willing to share. And in the end, whose money is it? Just think about it. Whose wealth is it that we have? Is it mine? No. Where does it come from? This rich man, or this the man who had the bountiful harvest, where did that come from? The bountiful harvest came from God. Where did all of the previous harvests come from that allowed him to get to this situation? They all came from God. And why is that? Because all things belong to God. God has just allowed us to use them, and hopefully we're using them to His glory. Let me tell you a completely fictitious story that I suspect maybe is not quite all that fictitious, about French fries, to help illustrate how God must feel when we hoard the blessings that He's given to us. One day, a father takes his son to a restaurant and buys him some French fries. And the father then does what every father does after buying their son French fries. He reaches over and grabs one to eat. The little boy slaps his father's hands and says, "Don't touch my French fries." Maybe you've had that experience, right? Maybe it's not a son that has told you, "Don't touch my French fries." What have you thought about as the father or the mother or the parent in that situation? Hey, that was my money that bought those French fries. I own those French fries. You are my child. I, in some ways, own you. Don't be so selfish. You could get angry. The father in this situation could get angry and never buy his son French fries again and teach him a lesson. Or the father could bury him in French fries. "Oh, you're going to be greedy about your French fries here? Well, we're just going to, that's all you're going to eat is French fries. You might like it for the first day, but that's all you're going to have." God has given us so much money, so much wealth, that when He asks us to share it with others, and we figuratively slap His hand and say, "Not my money," that's probably how God feels. That's, well, how you as a parent feel when you try to sneak a fry from your child. That I think that must be how God feels when we do that. "Keep your hands off my money." It was God's to begin with. God owns everything that we have. The third mistake that this man made was that he found happiness in the wrong thing. The rich man believed that he could be happy because of what he had. "I'm going to take my ease. I'm going to eat, drink, and be merry." Why? Because I got all of this stuff. You ought to take time and read a book, an article about the people who have won the lottery, have instantly come into lots of money, and how miserable their life has become as a result of that. There's so many examples. Money is not the source of happiness. Wealth is not the source of happiness. Treasures on earth are not the source of happiness. Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 through 21, the same passage that, same things that we read in Luke 12, but in Matthew, a passage we're a little more familiar with. "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths and rust destroy, where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Remember, wealth is a very fickle thing. It comes and it goes. And so to find joy in wealth is to find joy in something that's fleeting. Find joy in the Lord. That's where our joy should be. And if the Lord blesses us, then use that to serve God. The fourth mistake that the man made was that he thought he knew the future. He thought, "I'm going to be here a really long time." And God said, "You fool, tonight I will require your soul. Solomon reminds us in Proverbs 27 and 1 to not boast about tomorrow. Don't think, oh, you know, tomorrow's going to be really good. Proverbs 27 and 1, do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring forth. Life is so short. It's so unpredictable. James chapter 4, verse 13 through 16, come now, you who say today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell and make a profit, whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time, then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. But now you're boasting in arrogance. All such boasting is evil. We do not know what God has in store for us. There are many people who have amassed great wealth only to lose all of it. But if you have the Lord, you have everything that you need. There really is only one certainty regarding the future, and that is after life comes judgment. Hebrews 9:27, and it is appointed for men to die once, but after this, the judgment. The rich man made some mistakes. We ought to learn from his mistakes, because his mistakes are common mistakes. Each one of us can fall into these snares because each one of us is wealthy. The real question isn't about how much wealth you have. It isn't about how much you bring home. The question is, what will you do with your wealth? Let me tell you about Rockefeller. At the age of 53, he was severely ill. His physicians thought that he would die within the year, and that year passed agonizingly slow for him. And as he approached what he thought would be death, he awoke one morning and vaguely remembered a dream. He could barely recall the dream, but he knew it had something to do with not being able to take any of his successes with him into the next world. So here's a man who controlled all of 90% of the oil industry, and yet he realized at that point in time that he wasn't in control of his own life. So he was left with a choice: continue to have money as the priority in his life and die from the stresses that apparently were causing his illnesses, or do good with the gift that God had given him. And he chose to do good. He called his attorneys, accountants, and managers, announced that he wanted to channel his assets into things like hospitals, research, colleges, mission work. And on that day, John Rockefeller established a foundation. That foundation eventually led to the discovery of things like penicillin, cures for certain forms of malaria, tuberculosis, diphtheria. The list of discoveries goes on and on because of the choice that he made that day. But the most amazing part of that story is that once he decided to change his priorities in life, because up until he was in his 50s, his sole concern in life was amassing power and wealth. That was his sole purpose in life. I just want to be rich. And something changed. I want to help other people. That's what he opted to do. I want to help other people. And then, amazingly, he started to get well. As he began to give back a portion of his wealth to others, something happened with him, and he began to be well and got better. It looked as though he would die at 53, 54, but the man ended up living to be 98. Rockefeller learned gratitude and gave back from his wealth, and in doing so, it made him physically well. I don't know the state of Rockefeller's soul when he died. I don't know the state of your soul. You know the state of your soul. You know what is priority in your life. Have you laid up treasures on earth? Because if you do, the Bible tells you that that's where moth and rust and thieves are. Instead, lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. If you've not done so, you have an opportunity, whether it's through primary obedience, if you've not named Jesus and want to be baptized, you have an opportunity to do that. If you found yourself straying away from the Lord and want to make yourself right, you have that opportunity too, as we stand and sing the closing number.
$5.97.